what I'm going to be talking about for the next few minutes is the reality of taking the recommendations into practice. As Suzanne mentioned, if you know anything about what the CACFP looks like now, the recommendations look pretty different and at many different levels from what the program is used to dealing with at this point. And the committee recognized that it's quite a bit of movement that needs to happen in the program at the state level, at the level of sponsors who work with some of these child care providers, and then especially at the local level, the providers who are actually providing the food. There's a lot of change that has to happen in order for these recommendations to end up doing what the goal is, what the committee's goal was. Let me just say again, I have no relationship to disclose, just like anyone else. Now, Suzanne mentioned that this the CACFP report is the fourth in USDA programs to undergo this recommendations for revisions to make the programs more in line with the dietary guidelines. The first one Suzanne mentioned is the WIC program, and that's already in regulation. The second two are the school lunch and breakfast programs. USDA proposed a rule based on the IOM recommendations that was issued in January of this year. It's currently being reviewed. There were a lot of public comments. You may have heard about potatoes and other issues that have caused some consternation in some areas. But at last I heard, the hope is still that the final rule will be expected to be implemented or to begin implementation in the coming school year, 2012-2013. Now, CACFP, as Suzanne said, our approach on the committee was to build on the work and the knowledge and kind of the infrastructure that was built in these two previous reports, which addressed three programs. But the CACFP presents a lot of very unique challenges, very different from WIC, which is operated by a state agency, very different from the school lunch and breakfast programs, which are operated by school districts, and even though they vary in size and sophistication, they also have some level of infrastructure that is very different from what CACFP has. In CACFP, there's broad diversity some of the things that Suzanne mentioned, the program settings. We're talking about tiny family child care homes, mom and pop sized child care centers, to really large child care centers and Head Start centers, all of which have different issues and are starting from a very different kind of baseline. That obviously affects food preparation facilities. As Suzanne said, we're talking at the family child care setting about the food that a provider is bringing into her own home, which typically is food that's used for both her family and for the children that she's serving. And also there's a large diversity in the background, the education, and the incomes of individuals involved in serving children through the CACFP. And then another interesting thing that the committee was very mindful of is that the family child care providers that participate in the CACFP, many of them are low-income households themselves. And if implementing these recommendations has any sort of an undesired but negative impact on program participation, it not only will affect the individuals that we were hoping to serve, but could have a real impact on the livelihood of the family daycare providers. So we really need to be cognizant of the fact that these things affect these programs are in people's homes and affecting where they live day to day. So the report includes a number of different, very detailed discussions of things that need to be considered in implementing the recommendations, and I'm just going to hit the high points today. First of all, the committee recognized that there were three major factors that can influence the success of the implementation. And the first one, and this is not new to those of us who try to put any program intervention in place or any policy, its success depends on how well it is implemented and how well it's accepted by the people that you are trying to intervene with. So that's pretty standard, but we really need to think about it still. So how the new requirements are implemented and monitored at the local level. And a couple of the suggestions that the committee made to improve the likelihood of success, of successful implementation, is to think hard about taking a phased-in approach to the changes rather than hitting the ground running with all of the requirements at one time, which may be overwhelming. And also recognizing that whatever approach is taken, an extensive training and technical assistance mechanism needs to be put into place at the state, sponsor, and local levels in order for these recommendations to be integrated. Second, we need to realize that the extent to which children consume the foods offered to them is a very key part of this being successful. We don't want to be in a situation where back in the 70s, in the National School Lunch Program, children were forced to take certain things that the rules said had to be on their trays, and a lot of that food was winding up in the trash. So we want to make sure that we're not getting ourselves into a situation where we're promoting waste. So we need to think very carefully about supporting providers in implementing strategies to foster acceptance. And in some cases, the first place we have to foster acceptance is with the providers themselves, because they have to embrace these ideas and these ways of feeding and preparing food and feeding children themselves. And then finally, Suzanne didn't get into this very much, but she did mention some of the changes in the types and amounts of food that are being recommended, and these recommendations unavoidably have cost implications. It's going to cost more to serve meals and snacks that meet these recommendations, and somewhere in the implementation planning, we have to face that reality and figure out how we're going to deal with the associated costs. So first, talking about the recommendation for phasing in changes. Now, the committee recognized, and we had some people on the committee who were associated with states and sponsoring organizations who have already done many of the things that are recommended in the report. So there are definitely our programs, states and programs that have been pushing the frontier on this for a while and have made significant progress. But we have to recognize that many more states, providers, and sponsors will need time and assistance to succeed. So the committee recommended that USDA convene a panel of key stakeholders, again at all of those levels, state, sponsor, provider, to identify an optimal strategy for phasing in the changes and to build that into the proposed rule and the plan for implementation. And there are many different things that could be considered in a phasing in the recommendations. A few that were discussed in the report, one would be an optional phase-in of the requirement for lean meat or meat alternates at breakfast. Right now, the program does not require that any meat or meat alternates be offered at breakfast. So that's a big change in terms of practice. It also has cost implications. So that's something that perhaps is a candidate for phasing in. Another suggestion was phasing in the weekly targets for different types of vegetables. This is one of the things that we heard from people, that there's some fear about providers being able to juggle understanding the daily requirements versus the weekly requirements. And it's very different from the way they plan menus now. And maybe that's something that get them used to the sort of basic core things first, and then gradually over time move in the more complicated requirement about varying the types of vegetables across a week. And then finally, another idea was to begin with less stringent food specifications. Suzanne mentioned this food specification that goes on for a couple of pages. Maybe we don't, one idea would be not to go out the door with all of those, to choose some of the ones that are most easily implemented, the ones that are probably going to be most acceptable, and then sort of tighten up or expand the food specifications maybe every couple of years until we get to the ideal picture that we would want for those food specifications. So those are just some ideas for the phasing in of changes. And then in terms of extensive training and technical assistance, the committee recognized that as I think I said at the beginning, we really do need a comprehensive training and technical assistance program, and it needs to be designed to be so that it's adaptable to all the different program settings in which CACFP takes place. It needs to start with USDA, and USDA needs to train state agency staff, because state agency staff will be responsible for training and monitoring sponsors and providers at the local level, and then the state agencies need to train the sponsors and providers. And again, the report includes a discussion of many different things that need to be thought about and brought into this training and technical assistance. A few that I'm going to mention here, key concepts. One is helping people to figure out how to involve families, the community, and other stakeholders in embracing this change, helping providers to meet the challenges of menu planning, because it is going to be more complicated, and then finally streamlining systems for monitoring and reimbursement. I'm not going to talk about the last bullet there, but there is a discussion of that in the full report. So there was a lot of emphasis put on involving families, communities, and others, because clearly if the providers and the families that they're serving don't embrace these changes, it could have a negative impact on participation and acceptability of the program. So acceptance of changes by providers, the families, and the communities they serve is essential to success. And staff at all levels, as I mentioned, need training in TA, and specifically to learn how to engage stakeholders. This is a bit of an art. It's not something everyone knows how to do. So training and technical assistance in terms of to help providers at all levels figure out how to talk to their families, the families that they're serving, how to talk to their communities about why they're making these changes and what the benefits are for the children. One recommendation was considering broad-based advisory committees in communities and getting these key people who are known in the community involved in decisions, designs, and timelines for implementation, and trying to promote some coordination in local areas. And then recommendation that sponsors and providers form local partnerships with groups that can help them with some of the issues that they face in implementations. One idea is partnerships with grocers who can help with, on the next slide we'll be talking about taste testing activities. All of those kinds of things cost money. Building relationships with local grocers who want to support what you're doing, who may be willing to make some contributions on an ongoing basis. Advocacy groups are working with local FNEP or universities to help with some of the training and outreach to providers and to families. Training to meet the menu planning challenges. As I mentioned earlier, the menus will be more complicated. In addition to just knowing, in the existing requirements, you know that you need to offer a milk, a grain, one fruit or vegetable, and a meat at lunch. They're a little bit more complicated now because there are daily suggested proportions of whole grains. So you have to serve a grain, but a certain amount of the grains need to be whole grains. And then there are these weekly targets, as I mentioned, for vegetable subgroups. There's also variety in the types of food offered in snacks over the week. It's not exactly the same snack every single day. We're looking for variety across the week so that there's combinations of fruits, vegetables, grains, and meats. That's a little bit more complicated than people have worked with before. And then food specifications. So the committee recommended that USDA revise the food buying guide for child nutrition programs. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but if you work in CACFP or any of the child nutrition programs, it's kind of the Bible. I mean, it gives you all the information you need about how much food you have to buy to serve, how many children, appropriate portions. But it doesn't have any information that would speak to things like varying the vegetable subgroups over the week, how to plan a menu to deal with that, or the food specifications. So that Bible is very useful. It just needs to be brought up to speed with the recommendations so that it can continue to serve as the Bible for program providers. Another idea that we suggested, and this came from several of the people on our committee who work at the state or sponsor levels, to try to get providers to think about using cycle menus so that they get into a pattern, and then they're not trying to think every Monday or every Friday, what am I going to serve, and having to replan menus from scratch all the time. If you can get into a habit of using a cycle menu with a little variability, it isn't as daunting to plan, what am I going to do, what am I going to feed these kids. And then nutrition education for providers themselves, to those who need it, help in learning healthy food preparation techniques, label reading, things like that, that will help them in following the food specifications and planning appropriate menus. And then the second recommendation, working to foster acceptance. This is basically similar to what we would do in any kind of an intervention where we're trying to get people to embrace the idea of changing eating habits. Working with providers, working with children, recognizing that children aren't going to accept everything immediately the first time you put it in front of them, working with the concept of tasting portions of small foods, that children need to be exposed to food multiple times before they're willing to accept it, and then providing nutrition education for children. I've gone a little bit over, so I'm going to go quickly through these last two. Cost implications. The new meal requirements will increase food costs, and that stems mainly from the recommendations of more fruits and vegetables, increased variety of vegetables, the lean meat at breakfast, increasing whole grain-rich foods. There's some offset in programs that serve infants because we're recommending no solid foods for infants under 6 months of age. But the analysis that the committee did found that a 44% increase in food costs for breakfast, lunch, and one snack for a 2 to 4 year old. So that is a non-trivial increase in food costs. And non-food costs will also increase initially as people gear up to start doing these new things. So the expected increases in costs are going to be more than providers can absorb themselves and still run a financially viable program. So a big challenge that we put straight out in the report is that USDA and Congress needs to determine the extent to which they'll support the recommendations through increased reimbursement rates. An unfunded mandate isn't going to help anyone, and in fact it may have a deleterious effect on participation in the program, again thinking back to those family child care providers in particular. And that maybe there's something that can be done by to provide providers with guidance on cost-conscious purchasing practices. They don't have the wherewithal that school districts have to do volume purchasing and exercise some clout to get better prices, but perhaps there's some training that can be done to improve cost-conscious purchasing practices. So in conclusion, successful implementation will require careful planning and a comprehensive support system. And the implementation strategy should recognize the diversity in CACFP settings and provider backgrounds. The implementation strategy needs to support providers in fostering acceptance at community and family levels. The implementation strategy has to address the cost issue straight on and recognize that we can't expect people to do this without some financial support. And then we need to be careful that however the program is rolled out, it's done in a way that minimizes effects on participation at both the provider and client levels. Thank you.